So, good day everyone. We're here for another episode of the DVD show. So, for today, we have a PBA veteran who's been playing in many teams the past few years, but now he's the current starting point guard of the San Miguel Beermen. And I'll now welcome here on the DVD show, Simon and C. So, thank you for joining me here on the podcast.
Oh, man. Thank you for inviting me, bro. Appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, to begin, since now you're in the off season, but you mentioned that you're preparing for the pocket tournament since there's going to be a long break because of the World Cup and the SEA Games for Gila. So there's no like legitimate PBA tournament. So how's life been like for you on and off the court?
Right now, you know, it's kind of awkward. It's not awkward, but it's just weird because usually in the PBA, you don't really get an off season. So now that we've kind of got a little bit of an off season, I'm just trying to take advantage. Last conference, my body was really beat up, and I just had to like push through the lather part of it. My knee started swelling up, so I'm just trying to recover from that and trying to get stronger and just trying to stay ready. So I'm actually kind of excited to see the guys that we sign in this pocket tournament, or if we are signing any guys to come and try out for us or stuff like that, because, you know, the up-and-coming draft has a lot of good players, and I heard there's a lot of free agents out there looking to play, and I'm just excited for everyone. I keep looking back and remembering, you know, when I got drafted to the PBA, and it was an exciting time, so I can't even imagine how these guys are feeling.
Yeah, you mentioned, like, your body, yeah, it's a bit sore and a bit achy now after the conference. Do you feel that's, like, what do you think the reason it's like that? Is it more because the conferences are consecutively played, like there's barely any breaks, or you are minutes compared to the previous
for
conferences?
Sure. I mean, if you compare it to the NBA, right, they play a lot more games, 82 games a season, right? We play maybe 30 to 60 games, maybe, depending on how far you go in each conference, depending how long the semis and the finals are. Usually they all go to game seven. So especially the last time we made it to the finals, we won, and the semis went to game seven with Morocco, and then we went to game seven with Talking Tech. So that was a real grueling. And then we had 2 weeks off, and then we started the semifinal. I mean, the
next
Commissioner's Cup. So it was just, it's been a long year. And I don't think a lot of people know that about the PBA, how consecutive the conferences are and how hard it is to. That's why I applaud those teams that have won Grand Slams and these coaches that have won Grand Slams. I mean, shoot, everything has to, you know, really fall into place, and you guys really, like, they really had to execute to really, because I know how hard it is to win one championship. I can't even imagine how hard it is to win all three conferences. It was grueling all Filipino, so to go back-to-back-to-back is crazy, and I just applaud, you know, those teams and those players that went through all that.
Oh, yeah, but yeah, you mentioned about your body, and of course, you guys want to bounce back for the next conference, but it's going to take pretty long before that happens. It's the conference, I think, is October. But
October.
You mentioned about your body, so how do you intend to, like, recover and build up, especially, like, this pocket tournament, you can like experiment with other things, you have new teammates, or you can experiment with some schemes since it's not a legitimate conference and not like all the stars are going to be
right. So for me, I'm really taking advantage of this break. By I hired a ATG coach. It's a ATG stands for Athletic Truth Group, and I have been following a couple of the coaches, and they're really big on Instagram. One of the coaches is a knees over toes guy, and he has a very good testimony on Instagram on how he walked onto a Division I school, then ultimately played and messed up his knee, and now he has an artificial knee. He has a partial artificial kneecap, and the doctor said that he might not be able to fully bend his knee anymore. So for him to be able to do the things that he does on Instagram, which is like a vertical dunk, like with no step, and just being able to land, and his flexibility was a real inspiration for me. So I had talked to him for a little bit, but he's pretty busy with all his clients. So I saw another guy, his name is Range, and on his Instagram, his Instagram is The Full Range. So I hit him up, and he was kind of more interactive and there for any questions. So I linked up with him, and I've been, you know, video calling him and sending him videos. He's been critiquing my form and sending me workouts. So I've just been trying to get stronger, and I feel like I'm getting stronger. So I'm just trying to keep on with the program and, you know, hopefully see results, and hopefully you guys see a new and improved Simon and CISO in October.
Yeah. Hit called ATG again.
ATG. So it's called, yeah, Athletic Truth Group. Okay. You guys can follow those two coaches at on Instagram, that they're at Knees Over Toes Guy, and then the other one is The Full Range. So if you guys look that up on Instagram, you guys will be able to see all their videos and what they preach and the science behind how they train. It's a whole, like, forget whatever you learned for weight training and all that. Like, they go against a little bit of everything and bring a new wave of trying to get stronger in different areas where you're uncomfortable, and just really putting the emphasis on mobility and strength. So for me, that's a huge part in longevity in basketball. So I'm just trying to take it as serious as possible, because I want to play as long as possible.
Yeah, that's great. That's great that you had that mindset. But then how did you discover that? Like, did you just see it on Instagram? That's why you – did someone refer you? How did you discover it?
So I just kept seeing this guy. I saw this guy on Instagram on my feed. It's a random. And he was bending his knee like crazy. And then the next video was like him doing these crazy dunks. Then the next video was his testimony on how he messed his knee up. Really bad freak accident. Now he has a artificial kneecap. Doctor said he couldn't bend his knee all the way anymore. He might not be able to play basketball anymore. And
yeah,
he was doing, you know, he did what I did. He did some research. He found the ATG group and, you know, got with a coach, and now he's teaching it. So for me, I kind of want to, you know, do the same, where I get those same results and, you know, better myself for my longevity.
Oh yeah, that's a terrific mindset. And you mentioned also that you like video calls. So they're from abroad. So you like what? Go to a court? You go to like an open space? How do you like do the workouts that they make?
So for me, I work out at Cary Sports in BGC. I live right by there. So I go there, and they have a weight room and then a basketball court. So what I do is he'll send me the week of workouts. Then I'll send him videos of my form and how I'm doing them and how many reps, how many sets I could do. I'll send them to him every workout, and then he'll come back the next morning, because, you know, I'm in the future for him. He'll come back the next morning and just critique all those videos, like slow it down, maybe circle like where I need to like fix my posture, or, you know, tell me I it looks good. I can add some weight now. So just little things like that. And then, so yeah, I do that in the weight room. And then after I do that, I'm able to get shots up over at Cary Sports. So it's, I got a cool little setup going on, and feels more professional, because, you know, that's what, if you talk to guys in the NBA, they probably have like 30 to 45 minutes of team practice, and everything else is, you know, you're on your own. Skills, therapy, whatever you need, just be ready for the game type stuff. That's pretty much how they work. But so I'm just trying to take advantage of my time off and make sure I'm doing everything I can to help the team on my end.
Yeah. But since you mentioned that you've been doing a lot of extra work, and that's critical now, especially in this generation of basketball. Because I know, like, before, others would just do random stuff before games. Like, some wouldn't even go to practice, or they would like they would be late in practice, but then it would be okay for some coaches. But then now people do like a lot of extra work because they need to have an edge over their opponent. So in your career, was there ever like a juncture when you think that it could you could just win games or do well with your skills? And if ever that happened, like did it ever, when did that mindset change that you need to do like these extra work and not just rely on team practice?
That never happened in my career. through the time I got introduced to basketball from my dad and my uncles, like that was like the main thing was like, if you want to be good, you got to work hard, you got to put in the work. Like one of the biggest things someone told me is like, you get in what you put in. So if you're putting half-ass stuff, I mean, you're gonna get half-ass results. But I've always been the one, my teammates can attest to this too, is like I've always been the one to get shots up before practice or be in the weight room or stay later and get shots up or go through team practice and then nap and then go to carry sports and get shots up. Like my confidence when I step on the court comes from my preparation. So with that, like if my confidence comes from my preparation and I don't prepare well, then I'll have no confidence. So I've never there wasn't any point in my career where I could just rely on skill because I was never the most skilled. I was never the most athletic. I was never the tallest. I was never the smartest. So what I can do is outwork you. And over time of that mindset, you get skillful, you get smarter. You know, you learn the game more. The game slows down for you. You're able to make reads. You're able to make the right reads. And then after a while, like I'm in my 10th year playing. After a while, you just get with your routine. You know what you need to do. And maybe you're not putting in as much as you were when you were younger because your body can take it. But you're working a bit smarter than as if you were younger, you would just put all these reps in and, you know, make sure you make this, make sure you make that. Now, as I'm getting older, it's more of how efficient can I be? So, okay, maybe I'll make 10, but I can't miss two in a row. If I miss two in a row, then I start over. You know, like now I'm working like that instead of just being like, I'm going to make 1,000 shots today. You know what I mean? So now it's about the efficiency. And it also helps in the game because if you miss two shots in a row, you know, people usually confidence goes down, but if you're practicing that, then you know that averages are going to average out. And, you know, the next shot that you take, you shoot it with confidence again. And, you know, you just know that it's going to go in. The next one's always going to go in. So, yeah, I mean, that's what I can see from my 10-year career is just the difference. I've never relied on my skill, but the difference between how hard I've worked changed a little bit. I work smarter now. When I was younger, I worked harder.
Yeah, you're talking about working smarter. Yeah, like everyone needs to also know that since like, you know, like guys like Russell Westbrook, like those players, they have sometimes a hard time to adjust. Like now he is adjusting to his like new role, but then like some people like when they're young, they think they can do everything. Even if they're already like 30 plus, they still think what they can do at the early 20s, they can do. So for you, since you mentioned it's a 10-year career in the PBA and not a lot of players are able to have that longevity and even stars sometimes, they don't last that long with like a large role in a team because they can't fit or they can't adapt with the like changes. So for you, like, what do you think are the like key aspects and why you think that you're still here in the PBA after 10 years and continuing after that?
I think since the time I stepped foot in the PBA, I think the biggest advice someone gave me was, and this is like the same advice all the Phil-Ams before me gave me, was just like, how do you stand out? What makes you different between, obviously I'm Phil-Am. So I grew up in the States, but both of my parents are Filipino. I have Philippine passport and an American passport. But their advice was when I was in the D League, they were like, do you bring to the team that someone else on the team hasn't already brought? Mm-hmm. What makes you different? What makes the coaches want to sign you instead of a guy that maybe the same height as you, is from the Philippines, you know, maybe went to UAAP school and mm-hmm. has a name for himself? Me, I'm coming from a Division II college in San Francisco, California, and nobody really knows about me but my senior year highlight tape of college. Mm-hmm. So for me, what I thought made me different was I took pride on both sides of the floor. I can show you that I can score, and I can mm-hmm. show you that I can lock up the best guard on the other team or the best player on their team. Like, I always took pride in wanting to guard the best player or wanting to be the best defender, because I knew a lot of people don't like doing that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. For example, a great example was Scottie Thompson. When he first got into the league, you know, people were like, oh, he can't shoot.
Yeah.
But Tim Cone loved him and he never loved him. Why mm-hmm. why is that? He can't shoot though. He doesn't, you know, he can't shoot. Mm-hmm. He was getting double doubles like 10 points, right? His first years mm-hmm. in the league. But he rebounds the ball.
Yeah.
He's smart. He has a good basketball. He has a good feel for the game. So he mm-hmm. brings value in other ways. So for me, I saw that and I was like, I'm gonna bring value in other ways as well. Let me be mm-hmm. a knockdown 3-point shooter, a reliable point guard, and a reliable defender.
Mm-hmm.
And so each team that I went to, there's a process of where, like, you try to figure out, you know, what that team needs to be successful. And every team I went to, that there was always a process for me to figure that out. Some teams needed me to be a knockdown shooter. Some teams needed to be a really good point guard and get everybody the ball. Some teams needed me to be a knockdown shooter and be a lockdown defender.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there was only one team in my career that kind of just gave me the ball and was like, here, do what you do. And mm-hmm. that was my rookie year when I got traded to Phoenix, when they first started as Phoenix Fuel Masters. Mm-hmm. And I was averaging like 5 3-pointers made a game, but I was taking like 11 a game. Like, yeah. I've never, like, in my other teams, I've never taken 11 threes. Like, it's just not in the cards for me. So after that, you know, even though I showed that I can do that, when you go to these other teams, you still have to figure out what they need. Like, even in the beginning when I got traded to San Miguel, I was coming from Blackwater where I was averaging like 25 points a game. And then when I got to San Miguel, they had Terrence Romeo, Marcio Lasseter, CJ Perez, Gerald Cruz, Chris Ross, you know, like, where do I stand? Like, where do you want, like, my first couple weeks, I was like, how do you want me to play? Like, what do you guys need from me? And so the first couple, like, first conference or so, I didn't play much. Mm-hmm. Didn't play much, you know, but I was still in the gym. I still try to, like, keep my – even though I was so frustrated and, you know, asking questions like, why don't I play? Like, it never stopped me from being a professional and putting the work. So, yeah, man, for me, like, I just pride myself on playing on both ends of the floor. And then with my new role here at San Miguel as a starting point guard, I just try to emulate, you know, what Chris Ross has done over the years, being a defender, running the team, knowing when and how to get players the ball who need it at the right time. And then, you know, ultimately being a knockdown shooter when need to be. Because mm-hmm. with Jumar there, you know, he attracts like 4 guys. So once he kicks it out, he just – got to be able to knock shots down, and you know, and that all came with, you know, the process of knowing what they needed from me. So yeah, I think that's what makes me a little different. And yeah, I mean, I feel like, I mean, I was leading the league in assists for locals and up until the, you know, we ended the playoffs, and then Scottie Thompson played more games as they went to games. Mm-hmm. Game 6, you know what I mean? So get more opportunities to get more assists, and he kind of ran away with it. But yeah, man, I think it's just in my career I've shown that I could be a little bit of everything. And in my eyes, I feel like I'm one of the top point guards in the league. But, you know, I know a lot of other people and fans don't think so, but I could care less about what they think.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if I was you, I really wouldn't care what the others say, especially like whatever, they have their own biases and opinions on it. But yeah, it's great that you also mentioned that your assist numbers have been ascending, because I noticed that, like, even if I don't get to watch like San Miguel games, only the highlights, like I see on the box score that just like there was a game where like four of your teammates had like 20 plus points, then you had like, I don't know,
how like many 13 assists.
Yeah, you had like 13 assists. So yeah, that's why it's great that you're
there. Was a stretch there was a stretch in this conference where I had assist man of the day like six games straight. And I think I had like assist man of the game for like eight of the 11 games we played this conference. Yeah. I was like, I think I'm going to put that in my contract next time.
Yeah, you could say that. You could use that as a negotiating tactic.
Yeah.
Yeah. But going back to San Miguel, you mentioned that you've been adjusting to your role pretty well and now playing in the pocket tournament. Like, what are your like expectations, or what do you plan to like see as a like as a whole as a team? Since I'm not sure if like the CJ Perez or the Marshall Lassiter, like the vets, I'm not sure if they're all gonna get to play. So what do you expect to get here and like play also? But yeah, you mentioned like maybe free agents or maybe prospects in the draft.
For me, I don't think I'm expecting anything. You know, I'm just if I do play, I mean, if CJ or Marcio or Chris or them, they're not playing, I might be in that category as well. So I'm just ready for everything, anything, you know. Like I said, I'm still recovering from my knee injury. And, I'm just trying to get stronger. This pocket tournament is more for those draftees to show what they got, for these free agents to show what they got. So I'm excited for them. And I'm just excited to see, you know, who comes out and plays for these teams and how they do. You know, I'm a fan of the game, so I don't really know much about college out here, like the players coming into the draft and stuff like that. Like, I know a couple Phil-Ams that are joining the draft, so I'm excited for them to kind of come out here and showcase their skills, because I know for most of them it's been a long journey of trying to get paperwork and, you know, things of that nature. So for me, it's more of a enjoy type of mindset for me, and just really using this time to get stronger and get, you know, ready to be professional and be ready when my number's called. So that's my expectation. And yeah, man, I'm just excited to see how this PBA on tour plays out.
Yeah. Are there any players that are training with you guys that are new that you could say, or you're not allowed to say it yet?
We haven't even gone back to training yet. So I think we start May 2nd. So it's coming up maybe a week and a half.
Yeah.
So yeah, we haven't even, I haven't even seen my teammates in a while. So yeah, I'm just kind of putting my head down and trying to just get my body to peak shape so I can be able to perform when I need to.
Yeah, it starts when May 21, right?
May 21, and then I think it goes all the way to July 17.
Oh, that's a pretty long tournament. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know like how it works? Like, is there like a number of games you'll play? Is there like a format? And what's your opinion on it? Like, something new.
For me, like, I don't know, like I mean, I might be biased because we play all year round, but for me, like, I just see no point of it. But I do get it from the business side of the PBA, and it makes sense for them. But as a player who's playing three conferences every year, all year round, you know what I mean? Like, this is something, you know, most players need is rest. You know what I mean? But as a business side, you know, I do get that they're – you know, losing money during these months. So putting this tournament makes sense. But yeah, I'm kind of curious on how it's all going to play out too. But I know that we play everybody once, and there's no playoffs, no championship, so it's just straight through, play everybody once.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know how that's going to work, but I know that there's a couple out of town games. I know there's going to be games here in Manila, and then teams will have out of town games. So I'm guessing, you know, they're just trying to give opportunity for people in the province to come see us play, which is kind of cool because, you know, a lot of people aren't able to afford to come to Manila and watch, you know, their favorite players. So this gives them a chance to kind of, you know, get closer to them and give them something to remember. But yeah, for me, like, I would take the rest over everything.
Yeah, that's true, though. That's true. But then, yeah, the pandemic also, it hurt, like, the people watching from the provinces. It used to be, like, there used to be a game on Saturday, right? Like, they go to, like, Bacolod or they go to, like...
Yeah, like, Bicol, Cebu.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of out-of-town games for us.
Yeah, maybe they'll try that out. Let's see. What I don't also know, I got surprised because I thought it was a long break for the PBA. Like before, I remember people were talking about it, like they wouldn't have a job for like 5 months or 4 months, like no basketball. But I guess now there's something new, that there's going to be something.
For me, I feel like it would be very beneficial because, all right, let's picture this, right? The PBA, we're all year round, play all year round pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
There's no break and there's no time for fans to miss us.
Yeah, yeah.
With the NBA, they have their season and then it's football season. Then it's baseball mm-hmm. season. And then you go watch those games. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And when NBA season comes back around, everybody's like, oh, I'm gonna buy tickets for the whole year.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see, you know, LeBron play, Damian Lillard, Steph Curry. I can't wait for those guys to come out, Kyrie Irving, and play. I'm going to get tickets to watch them play. There's excitement because they missed us. With the PBA, we don't get that because 2 weeks later, we're going to be playing again.
Yeah.
So I think if they only made it maybe like two conferences, gave us a good like 3 month break, then started back up with the All-Filipino and then another conference, then I feel like it would be more beneficial, especially for the fans, because it gives them a chance to miss us. And I don't know, for me, like I get a glimpse of different leagues in Manila, right? In the NPBL.
Mm-hmm.
They have so many fans at their games. And sometimes, luckily, I'm on San Miguel where they have a good fan base, but sometimes there's no fans in the stands.
Yeah, yeah. I see like, that, yeah.
Like, sometimes it's just, depending on what team you're playing for or you're playing against, there's not going to be any fans there. But you can guarantee if you're playing Ginebra that there's going to be no seats available.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But yeah, I watch those leagues. I watch the UAAP, even the NCAA. The stadiums are packed.
Mm-hmm.
Drumline, like it's crazy atmosphere. Like the only time I get that atmosphere is when I make it to the finals.
Mm-hmm.
Get the spotlight, right? Get the spotlight, you walk in. Feels like you're really, you know, in a professional setting, like, oh, man, but they call my name out. Okay, let me, you know, put on my game face and run out there and be ready to play. Like, those little things matter, man. Like, and then, like, you know, in Japan or Taiwan, like, regular season game, they have spotlight for the home team. They turn off all the lights, spotlight, they call out their players, their imports, coaches and all that, like, that, like, as a player, like, that stuff hypes you up. That stuff's like, all right, I gotta, you know, it's time to play. Like, it's time to perform. So, you know, little things like that, I think that can be more beneficial to the league, just making it a more, like, I wouldn't say make it more like an NBA. I'm just saying, like, you know, make it more like less routine. Like, you know, like it's every game. We got a doubleheader. The announcer calls out, okay, coming to the court, San Miguel versus Terra Firma. Yeah. Right? And then they come out. If you're Ginebra, you get the loud cheer. But like, there's no excitement before the game. Like, put us, like, turn off the lights and put a spotlight on us and call us out, you know, like every game. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Something, you know, just something different. It's just my suggestion, but, you know, I mean, the PBA has been around for a long time, so can't say that they don't know what they're doing, and they obviously know what they're doing. Yeah, for me, like, I just feel like that'd be way more exciting for me as a player. Come out there, spotlight. Put the spotlight on you. Have your family out there looking. I'm like, dang,
yeah,
he's really out there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is also cool to see yourself on TV and be able to, you know, have my parents and, you know, my little nephew back home watch my games. So, in that sense, it's cool, man. Either way, I'm gonna go out there and perform and give it, you know, my all. These are just little suggestions that I think that would kind of elevate our league.
Yeah, I understand that too, since like I'm for LaSalle and like, you know, we play when September to December, I think the basketball season, and then we recruited like how many new guys already then at the Ateneo and UP. They're more noisy in the recruitment, but then now we're all waiting until September. We can't like wait for them to play. It's only the preseason tournament, but preseason, like, not all the stars play all the long minutes there. Play 20 minutes only. Yeah, that's why. I understand what you mean. And yeah, I also with the leagues, like, I hear from shows and our podcast also that they suggest the two conference format, like, also for Gilas. Like, it's hard to practice with Gilas. Like, I'm pretty sure you read the articles. Some guys in the finals, they don't get to practice or whatever, but I'm not sure. Maybe, yeah, it's like a business thing. That's why they still try to do the three conference thing. But I don't know. We'll see. Maybe they hear the suggestions of people like you or like Empower and Play. And Noli Iyala, he's like the former commissioner. He also says like two conference format during his time worked out well for Gilas during his time. So I don't know. Maybe why not
try it again? You know, like even this time, like Gilas, I know it's only the C game. It's the C games, right? Coming up.
Yeah,
I know it's only the C games, but you know, you have guys like Jamie Milonzo and Jeremiah Gray, Mikey Williams, who are supposed to be joining this team. But they are, you know, like for me, like if I was just played in the finals, like I want to go celebrate back home with my family. Yeah, if I just won a championship, like I want to go back home and celebrate with my mom, my dad, my nephew.
Yeah,
you know, bring back a ring to the house and bring back some jerseys so we can hang up. But then they can't because they gotta play Gilas now it's more time away from family. So for me, I don't know, it's different for the fill-ins, and I hate saying this because I feel like we're all Filipino, but we get put in a category called fill-in. And I don't know. I just don't like it because I just feel like we're all Filipino. But in my outlook of it, it's difficult for fill-ams because we're away from our families. So after practice, we go home, we go watch TV or whatever. The guys that were born here get to go home to their wives, get to go home to their mom and dad, their families, their brothers and sisters, their kids. You know what I'm saying? Nephews, nieces, just maybe like a 10-minute drive away. For me, like I got a nephew who's 4, and then I got another nephew like about to be born in July. So, and my nephew that's already born, I've missed, like, I saw him when he was a newborn, and then I saw him when he was about 1.5. And then I saw him when he was 3. Now he's 4.
Yeah.
And it's like I've missed so much of his growth. Now he's talking full sentences. And you know what I'm saying? I just feel like people don't get the sacrifice that fill-ams make to be able to play in this league and be successful. Like, I just feel like why we push for these breaks is to have time with our family, because throughout the year, when we're playing three conferences in a row,
it's impossible.
We we're excluded from any time with our family. The time with our family that we have is through video, FaceTime calls, and even that's hard because of the time difference. Unless you know about the time difference and set set times to talk and you know, spend time with your family, I mean, it's difficult. The first couple of years here, you know, you have to get used to, you know, being alone and being homesick. Luckily, I got lucky and was brought into a really tight-knit Phil-Am group with, like, Gabe Norwood, Chris Ross, Saul Mercado, Joe DeVance, Josh Urbistondo. So, you know, I got invited to Thanksgivings, birthdays, Christmases, New Year's. So I wasn't too homesick because I also formed a family out here where we celebrated, you know, the American holidays and you know, we all knew about the sacrifice that we all took to come play out here. Being away from family and stuff like that. So we all get, you know, everybody needs, you know, to be with someone and not be alone during the holidays. Because people would never understand this until they're in it. It's like it gets lonely out here as a PBA player, as a Phil-Am PBA player, because you're not with family. You might have uncles and cousins and aunties, Lolos out here. But it's not like you're seeing them every day. You know, you're busy with practice. You're busy recovering. You got to do different things, pay bills, you know, just regular, normal life stuff. But I would really like the fans and, you know, people to understand what it takes and the sacrifice it takes to be away from family and still go out here and perform ultimately for the fans and for people watching at home. Cause I feel like we get hated on for, you know, wanting these two conference setup so we could have a break. But it's not like we want to have a break because we want to just be on vacation. It's man, all year round, we don't get to see our family. So the time that we do, and even when we do the three conference setup, the time we do have with our family is like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And it's like me flying back to California, San Francisco, is like we get back the same day that we fly out here. But when we need to be back here, we have to minus 2 days from our stay because it takes 2 days to get back here. It's like we're missing more time now. Have a short break with our family. Plus, with the time difference, we have to miss another couple of days. Like, oh, man. So just try to cherish every moment of it. But you can see it from two different ends. I mean, it's what you sign up for. So what you sign your contract for, you know what I mean? I see it from both ways. I just hope that people understand the sacrifice that us Phil-Ams take to perform at a high level out here for the fans and everybody watching us.
Yeah, I appreciate that you sharing that. And yeah, I admire also that you sacrificed a lot playing here in the country and like playing for the fans and for your family, of course. And that's why also like Mikey Williams, right? He's one guy heavily criticized, like right after the conference, right? He would be posting on Instagram that he's in the airport, like, and then he'd go back late. He'd be the only one out on practice. And then people would say stuff already, like criticize him, but then they don't understand that. I don't think he has a lot of family also here. So even when you guys like saw him in the restaurant, when you won the championship, right? When you beat them, people were criticizing him, but they didn't know the story.
He actually was there before us. So we actually crashed his party. We actually crashed his dinner because he was there hours before us. And there's not many places open at 11 on a Sunday. Like, he only had a few options, and most of the options are in the fort. And obviously, where we went was a place where people go and celebrate as well. So, kind of just wrong place, wrong time for him. But yeah, with him, even his thing, he gets criticized for going back home. Like, people gotta understand, man, you can never get time back. So, and I'm starting to learn that, like with the pandemic, losing my grandmother during the pandemic, like, you don't get time back, man. You gotta spend your time wisely with your loved ones, cherish every second, because you just never know what's gonna happen. Like, tomorrow something can happen. I mean, knock on wood, I hope nothing does, but in the back of your mind, you just gotta be mentally ready. Like, you don't get time back. So when you do have the time, reach out to your parents, reach out to your cousins, your nieces and nephews, tell them you love them. And because, like I said, man, you don't get time back. You don't want to look back and regret, like, dang, I should have went back home. I shouldn't have stayed in the field. I should have just went back home right after we won. Or maybe just take the fine and stayed a couple more days, just so I could hang out a little bit more with my grandmother, or hang out a little bit more with my mother. And I think Mikey, I don't want to put his business out there, but I think Mikey grew up knowing that at a young age. So for him to get criticized for, his past experiences, he just values his time with his family. So I think it's wrong to criticize him too. Yes, I get it, business standpoint of the team, and it's not fair to the other guys. But like I said, I think you guys got to take into account of the sacrifice that Phil Am's take to come play out in the Philippines. Like, I think that just gets overlooked a lot. But for me, like, I try to be professional about it. If I do stay, then I'll inform my boss, and they want to find me, they can find me. But yeah, I think as I get older, I'm just really starting to understand the value of cherishing time with loved ones.
Yeah, that's something that the listeners should actually also get, because some people take it for granted. They'll say like, "Oh, there's still a lot of time. Let's whatever. Like, you can do something else,
Right.
or let's do it next month or whatever." But you never know sometimes when things happen. And yeah, I think also like everyone realized that a lot when the Kobe thing happened before the pandemic, when Kobe Bryant.
Exactly.
But I wanted to ask,
Exactly.
since you mentioned like Phil Amps, and I've had like the guys you mentioned, like Gabe, Joe, and like Saul here in the podcast, so they talk a lot about it also. But I wanted to ask also about the rule. Like, there's a rule in the PBA, I think. I'm not sure if they still follow it, wherein you need to have like 5 Phil Amps only, like, or something
Yeah,
per
that's another
game. Like,
thing.
what's your
That's
thoughts on
another
that,
thing.
and how could they like maybe adapt or adjust? Because that's been an old rule, so maybe now it's new time, they can change it.
For me, this is just my point of view. I'm not saying they should change it. I'm not saying they're wrong for it. I just don't think that we should be categorized as filling. Like, it takes so much work and time to achieve these papers needed to be eligible to get drafted in the PBA, that after all that time, okay, this is my situation, right? This is how I see it. And a lot of situations for Phil-Ams are the same or much harder. For me, I came out here after having a great senior year at a Division II school, NCAA Division II school in California. Made a highlight tape, sent it out to a couple coaches. They told me that I had to move out here and try out for these D-League teams and get my paperwork done. So I save up for a one-way ticket, which was $700 one way. I pack up all my things. I sell my car, so I have extra money when I'm out here. And I move out here. I move into a studio in Capitolio, where I can touch the walls with my hands. And right when I land, that day I land, I had the whole day to myself. I try to figure out where I was at, where I can eat, where I could get groceries and, you know, stuff like pay my bills. And then the next day, I had to get all my paperwork. There wasn't any Grabs, Ubers, Comcast, nothing. I had to sit outside my condo street and flag down taxis.
To take
me to immigration so I can get my paperwork done. And so I did that for 2 weeks straight, every morning from the day I landed, 2 weeks straight, every morning.
So long.
And this is another thing that they don't get is like, when I moved out here, I understood Tagalog. I didn't speak it. So when I would flag down these taxis, I was like, Kuya, immigration, can you take me to the immigration? And because I spoke English, they were like, oh, no, nosebleed. I'm not going to just drive off.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh my God, I'm about to be late. I need these papers done. Like,
yeah,
it was a stressful time. So for it, I'm sure it's even more stressful now because they're, I feel like they're more strict on the paperwork you need now and and stuff like that. So for me, it was a really stressful time to get the paperwork just to be even eligible to get drafted.
Yeah.
Right.
Like Jeremiah Green, right?
Right. So that was a stressful time already. And then you get drafted to the D League where you're put up against these guys who already have a name for themselves, who already have a following for themselves, who already have a relationship with the coach because they're so well known from their colleges. And then you take little old me from California, who it doesn't even matter if I'm more skilled or if I'm better, if you know, they just don't know me. So you get put on this team, you know, you go through tryouts, you actually show that you can play, they like you, okay, put them on the team. Then when the game comes, I was playing like two to three minutes a half, and it'd be at the end of the half or end of the game, depending on what the situation of the game was.
Yeah.
We were winning, if we were down, if we're getting blown out.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the playoffs where they played me and I scored like 15 points and we won that they started giving me a chance. So luckily I was ready for the opportunity, but I can't even imagine that these Phil-Ams now to have a stressful way to get your paperwork, then get on a D-League team so you could be eligible for the PBA draft, to not play until your opportunity comes, to be mentally strong, to just keep putting your head down and keep working and being ready for that opportunity. And then after the D-League, you get put in a draft where now you're put up against those same guys with the same following and the same, you know, name for themselves. And it's just you and whatever you have on YouTube or whatever you've shown at the combine or whatever you've shown at the tryouts of those PBA teams. And then as you get drafted, they say you get drafted and it's not even guaranteed that you have a contract.
So after
you get drafted, you go to dinner with the team, right? They say when practice is tomorrow. And the day after you have practice, and that whole week of practice, they're evaluating you to see if you can get, if you're good enough to get a contract. And as a Phil-Am in the PBA, the rule is either five, or I think they changed it maybe a couple years ago to seven now.
Oh, okay, seven.
So you're allowed seven spots per team for a Phil-Am. And that's why I don't like that they call us Phil-Ams, because well, we did all this paperwork to make sure you know that we're Filipino.
Yeah.
And then we get categorized and then get cut more opportunity to make the PBA. Like at this point, it's not even about skill. It's about who you know now. You know what I mean? So that's just on me. Like I feel like it's super hard for Phil-Ams to get into the league because of so many different rules. And yeah, hope. I mean, maybe they'll change it. Maybe they won't. But it also, you could see it on the other side of it where it's like, okay, I'm getting little opportunity and I have a small window to put my foot through the door to get into this league. Okay, now I got to really work and be focused and you know, really show people that I belong here. So it could work out both ways. It just depends on how you see it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good that you also mentioned that it's difficult for Phil Amps and for you, like the longevity part, it connects well, because even if it was difficult in the beginning, you found your niche in the PBA. And yeah, you mentioned a lot already that you can adapt to various roles, depends on what each team makes you do. So in the start of your career, right, you were like moving around like Phoenix, NLEX, and a lot of these other teams. So in that part of your career, like what were you like thinking? Were you like thinking of maybe going back? Were you really wanted to stay here, even if like you kept moving teams, you kept changing roles, and I don't know, maybe the systems are very different also compared to what you were used to playing in the States, playing in San Francisco. So what was your early juncture of your career like before you actually found like this spot now, like San Miguel and Blackwater and TNT, where they actually already play you a lot every night?
Right. For me, when I moved out to the Philippines, my mindset was there was no way I'm going back home without saying that I made it. Mm-hmm. That was my mindset. Like I've seen so many Phil Ams from my area be like, oh yeah, I played on the Philippines. Oh, and then you ask them like, oh, when? Or like, for who? Mm-hmm. And they're like, and they played for like maybe like a 1 week tournament with like some team that I don't like, that's not even in the PBA or something. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to be one of those guys. So my mindset was always like, no matter what, you're going to make it in this league somehow. Mm-hmm. No matter what, your work ethic is going to take you to be able to play in this league for years and years to come. And myself, with my work ethic and surrounding myself with all these, you know, high valued Phil Ams in the PBA, I feel like it was a bit easier because I had people to talk to and give me good advice on what I needed to do, how to present myself, how to keep my emotions intact and in control. But yeah, my early years was there is no way I'm not going to be on that floor, and then there's no way I'm not going to compete for a spot on a PBA team. Like, I've come way too far and I've worked way too hard in my life at this game, and there was no way I was going to go back home as one of those Phil Ams that, I was out there, but I didn't really make it, and I didn't want anybody back home or any of my peers, any of my family members, you know, even have a chance to be like, oh, well, he tried. I'm like, no, I did it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that was my whole mindset. I was like, nah. Even the time where I was like, man, I don't think the Philippines is it for me. Like, I'm homesick. Like, I just want to be home with my family and friends. Like, there was always the voice in my head, like, telling me to stick it out. So, yeah, that was my motivation at the time. And then, like, my first years and my first couple of teams, like, I just wanted to be out there and like compete and show the league that I deserve to be here and that I belong here. And I feel like in my first couple of years in the league, I showed that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you did. And I've been following your career. Like, yeah, you've been one of the best shooters here in the PBA. And I sometimes I wonder like why they move you. Like, for instance, like in my opinion only, like when you were on TNT, like wasn't that in the bubble when you guys made the finals and you were like the starting point guard? And
yeah,
I don't know, you guys played well, except in the finals, I think there were injuries that happened. That's why you didn't.
Yeah, we lost Bobby Ray. We lost Jason Castro.
Yeah.
Yeah, we lost a lot of guys, but we had a hell of a season. I think it's just, you know, what the management wants and needs. They heard, I mean, obviously it worked out for them. They heard, you know, Mike Williams joining the draft. Unfortunately, this is an unfortunate, like, I played well enough to have enough value for them to trade meets a Blackwater to get their pick for Mikey Williams. So I mean, it all played out, you know, for the best for them. I mean, there's no hard feelings on Talking Tech side. It's just, it's part of the business, man. Like that stuff happens even worse in the NBA. So it's just part of the business, you know. For me, like my mindset is just be grateful for that I'm still playing the game that I love and getting paid for it. So that was my gratitude motivation. And then my competitive motivation was like, okay, wherever I go, I'm just going to help them win.
Yeah.
Or try to help them win.
Yeah, it's a brilliant mindset. I mean, not everyone would have that mindset when they get traded like numerous times in their career, because others might think that they're not wanted in that organization or something. But good that you have that mindset. But yeah, playing against TNT in the finals, let's talk about that. You winning the championship against them in the All-Filipino Conference. So how did that feel like for you, especially going up against your former team? And then, you said they traded you to get the pick to get Mikey. And then now, weren't you like one of the primary defenders on Mikey in the finals? And you did like a pretty good job on him, and you guys won. So how was the whole journey like for that conference?
Well, when we figured out that we're gonna play TNT in the finals, obviously there's, you know, a fire that was lit on my end. It gave me an opportunity to show my value. And it gave me an opportunity to flip it in my own head to compete for myself and to show them that, you know, I could have been a huge part in their success as well. I mean, me and Mikey, we're like brothers, man. Like I'm that's my boy, man. I would, you know, I am so proud of him and what he's accomplished, especially this last championship. But I didn't do it alone. Like when we won, I didn't do it alone. It was me and Chris Ross, taking turns on Mikey, and you know, when he was guarding Mikey, I was guarding Jason. When he was guarding Jason, I was guarding Mikey, and we kind of just had a good relationship to where, like, all right, bro, like, both of our mindsets were defensive mindsets, and we're like, we're not going to let these guys, you know, get going. And it obviously worked out for me and Chris, and Chris really brought it home for us in game seven. I think game six, I kind of heated up, and me and Marcio kind of made it rain in Araneta to push it to a game seven. Yeah. And the beginning of game seven, I came out hot again, scoring four threes in a row. And then, Chris, CO, and CJ, Jumar kind of just took it away in the fourth, which they should. You know, those are our main guys that have been there before. I've been there before as well, but this is obviously my first championship that I've won. So it is definitely a good feeling to win that one, especially against Talking Ticks. But like I said, there's no hard feelings against Talking Ticks. I just kind of use that situation as motivation to kind of push me through and take it to next level.
Yeah, that was a fun series for me, like watching it, reaching the maximum, which is seven games. You mentioned a lot about Chris Ross, and since I follow the PBA a lot, like I noticed that coach now, like Coach George, like he puts you as the starter. Like I'm not sure when that started, when what game or like what conference, but then before it was Chris all of the way, then now it's you. So maybe does it help also that your relationship is close? That's why it's fine, like if you start or if he starts. Like there are some teams like Golden State now, like Draymond came off the bench last game, and then Andrew Wiggins came off the bench in game one. Like they try out stuff, but they have a solid foundation. So it doesn't matter. But then for other teams, I'm pretty sure you know that like someone's coming off the bench, he's been the starter for like 20 games, and then he's going to get pissed or he's going to like throw a tantrum. So for you, how did you guys adjust now that you're like the starter? And you've been flourishing, like you mentioned, with the assists this last conference.
Well, with me and Chris, like, we have no ego. Like, it doesn't matter who starts. You know, as long as we get our chances to compete out there, I think we're going to be okay. with him, he kind of acts like the big brother, you know what I mean? So I go to him, or he, whatever he sees on the court, he'll, you know, pull me aside and be like, hey, man, you got to look for this. When you play defense, play it like this because you're giving up, you know what I mean? Like just little things like that. And then so for him, I've learned a lot from him just being teammates with him. And, you know, for he's been the star point guard of this organization for a long time and won 9 championships. Like, if he starts over me, like, I'm okay with that. Like, I have no ego towards it. I don't think I should start. I don't think that if I start, I play well. Like, I could start. I could come off the bench. And whenever my name is called, I'm ready. Like, it doesn't matter if I start or not. And I think he has the same mindset, so it just works. And basically our mindset is whatever it takes to win. So as long as we're winning, like we're good. It doesn't matter who starts, doesn't matter who plays, it doesn't matter. Like as long as we're winning, we're good.
Yeah, that's the mindset that a championship team should have. That's why, yeah, you guys continue to win championships despite like a star-studded team. Like people say, like too much star power. Sometimes it's not a good thing, but it's not been a problem with San Miguel. So yeah, I wanted to also ask you on that, like, yeah, you mentioned that you were put in that team and there were like a plethora of guards who are talented also like you, and you didn't like, what's my like primary role here? So what's been the key like from San Miguel, like ever since you came there until now? Like there's been a change of coaches already and stuff like that, but the foundation still like the same with June Mark, Chris, and yeah. What's your opinion on why you guys continue to flourish despite like, yeah, some star-studded teams, you know, don't really win, and then but then you guys, you do.
I think for us, the new guys that have come in, I think the biggest thing for us is that we've learned to adapt with those guys. So we understand that they've won 9 championships. We understand that they're the guys of the team. They're the leaders. And for us, we just try to bring our talent and skill and competitiveness to the team and work on, you know, just kind of working with them. Like it's for me, the biggest thing for me is I never came into the team thinking about competing with Chris or Terrence or whoever was at the point guard spot. Like for me, it was just about, okay, what can I do or what can I bring to this team to help them win? And then I let the coaches decide who should play or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, for me, it's that part of the game isn't up to me. So what I can control is myself, what type of teammate I am, you know, how I play. So with that, that's what I try to focus on. And obviously, like I said, different teams asked different things from me, and San Miguel kind of needed a point, like a true point guard that knew this, that could know the system, get the ball to the guys when they need, and then be a knockdown 3-point shooter. And I think I fit in that role pretty well.
Yeah, that's for sure. And yeah, I hope that you continue to do well in San Miguel and still continue improving and, you know, compete for the championships in the next conferences. But how about Coach Lay Austria? I wanted to ask you about him. Like, you guys won the championship, like, yeah, with him. And then, not sure what happened. But then, yeah, there was a sudden coaching change. And I have a feeling, like, in my opinion, that based on what I read on social media, that people, like have a wrong perception of him. Like, he's won so many championships. But sometimes they just, like, he won because he has June Mar. Like, it's a cheat code. Or they don't really give him credit, even if there's only a few people, few of those diehard PBA fans that, you know, or those PBA fans that would give him credit. So what do you think's wrong about the perception, and really, how is he really with you guys and like as a person, like even off the court?
I mean, as a person, he's probably one of the most caring guys. Like he's a good guy. Ever since I've been on the team, like when I had COVID, he would text me like, hey, Sam, I heard you caught COVID. Are you okay? Is everything okay? You need anything? Stuff like that. Or like, if it was my birthday, he would always text me happy birthday. When he got changed and I started playing really well, after a couple games, he would text me and say, you know, congratulations on the win. You're playing really well. Keep it up. for me, I didn't get to know him too well because of the short time I did have with him. But I think that the long, gruesome years of championships and competing got, just kind of took a toll on him. And I really believe he just got kind of tired, like coaching for so many years and doing the same thing. Like, it could get tiring, especially
For
the way
sure.
we play. Like, we don't get much time off,
Yeah,
especially
don't he
probably
said.
the coaches probably don't get much time off either. They have to be at the gym the same time we do. So, I think he just got a little bit too tired, or he just kind of needed a little break. But as a person, like he's never done anything wrong to me.
Yeah, that's great to hear from you,
And
but
yeah, and like
go ahead.
with the coaching change, like for me, like kind of just happened, and then like we didn't ask questions because we just went straight into the season. So for me, like I don't know what happened, but I guess it was, the decision of our collective decision from Coach Leo and the management and the other coaches, and then they, make Coach George the head coach. I'm sure Coach Leo talked to him before he took his leave and informed him. But yeah, so I really don't know what happened. Like as players, we kind of just had to go with the flow because we were straight into the Commissioner's Cup after that.
Yeah. How did you guys find out about it? And I mean, you can come down to like the nitty-gritty and what's different between the two of them, but like what's the main difference of playing, like not like who you prefer or what, but like what's the main difference based on the team's style of play or offense and defense? Like what's different from the two of them?
I think there's a lot of similarities, but the difference with Coach George and Coach Leo in terms of offense is Coach Leo stuck with what he knew won him championships, which was feed the ball to Junmar and then be ready to shoot, work as a team, shoot with confidence and work through Junmar. And then with Coach George, I mean, granted, Junmar got hurt a couple times, so we had to figure out ways to win without Junmar. But he still had a system where it incorporated Junmar, and it also incorporated the strengths of other players to contribute as well, just in case we had to move away from Junmar. So that was a difference. I wouldn't even call it a difference. I think it was just an adaptation from the events that had happened, with Junmar getting surgery in his throat, to the Japan MCL sprain. So we didn't really get to have Junmar throughout the whole season. You know what I mean? But when we did, we were very successful. So, like I said, there's a lot of similarities, and I don't think it's a difference. I just think that Coach George had to adapt to what he had on the team at the moment. But yeah.
I hope that you guys continue to adjust, and it's something new that I get to see from you guys. Like their rotation changes sometimes. Like, he tried to change some stuff. Like, of course, during the Ginebra series, like the recent one, since that's the one I remember off the top of my head. Like, yeah, it's really an adjustment period for you guys, and yeah, hopefully it's a big bounce back here. So yeah, thank you again, Simon, for joining me here in the pod. And before you go, I wanted to ask like these general questions I ask my guests before they leave. And one of it
Okay.
is, I'm pretty sure you know that you watch the NBA bubble at the NBA, and then like in the bubble, that's where the players became more vocal and like social and political issues. And yeah, you mentioned also that yeah, Filipinos, they're more like shy when it comes to these things. They're not that vocal. But then like in the elections and the pandemic, like people became more vocal on their opinions and their sentiments and these things. So you as an athlete, like as a basketball player, would you suggest like for people to like use their platform to amplify their voice, like as a player, or were you would you suggest like not really? Like, what's your opinion on that, on how social and political issues can like intertwine with sports?
I think there's a way to do it But here in the Philippines, I just feel like it's a little different. I feel like in the States, the NBA players are able to do it because the way it's all set up is like people look up to them, and they're idols of some of the government officials. You know what I mean? So they do take their voice into account. I just feel like here in the Philippines, if you're not like a Manny Pacquiao or, something of that stature, I would even throw in like if like a LA Tenorio, like if you're like that, then maybe you could use that your platform, like a Mark Kagiwa type of player, like people who like really have influenced the game, or like Jimmy Alapa, stuff like that, like. Those players, I feel like, have a better chance of voicing their opinion and having it actually heard than a player like me who's won one championship and like, been on several teams. Like, I just don't feel like the government or people in general, Filipino people in general in the country would even care about what I would have to say about anything.
Yeah, that's right though. I understand what you mean on that, and yeah, that's great that most of my guests also like share the same sentiments as you. So yeah, for the next question, like, what if you had the opportunity to have dinner with five people, dead or alive, who would you invite on that dinner?
Dinner with who?
Five people, dead or alive.
Five people. Oh, five people, huh? Jordan. Kobe. Bill Gates. Dead or alive, huh? Five people you said, right?
Yeah, you have
So
three
I got
already.
Jordan, Kobe, Bill
Bill
Gates.
Gates. It's
I
tough.
would be I would go with Gandhi.
Okay.
And then I will probably have to go with let's say all-time favorite. I would have to put my all-time favorite celebrity crush, and that's Shay Mitchell.
Oh, okay. That's a great list. It was tough for you to cut it down to five among all the
So I
people.
would pick top two favorite basketball players, right? That I would pick Jordan and Kobe just because I want to pick their brain about the sport. I would pick Bill Gates to pick his brain about business, how he became successful. Gandhi to pick his brain about just the spiritual aspect and emotional aspect of how he can control and be, one with everything. And then, Shay Mitchell, so I get a chance to talk to her one-on-one.
Yeah, that's great list. I got great list. But then yeah, for the final question that I ask my guests, like, since you know that I invite all my guests through like social media or email, since I'm still not like in sports media, like I'm trying to get there. And who would you suggest that I could invite here in the podcast that would have like a great story to tell or they're just fun to talk to about sports? Like not only basketball players, like you could suggest other athletes as well, like who are just random people off the top of your head that you could suggest?
I always suggest people to have Joe DeVance on their podcast. He's just funny. He'll liven up the podcast with just his energy. And then maybe I think who would be good? I think my good friend Vange Albano. He works really close with like the EASL and like He's really good. He's really in tune with the sports out here and in Asia. He's very business mindset. You could probably pick his brain with like social media and how to get into media. He's very well connected. He probably also has a good story. I know he played out here for a little bit. But then took a whole nother route. So maybe that'd be a good change of pace for your podcast. So Banj Albano. Sure.
Oh, okay, yeah. So I'm not familiar with him, but yeah, I could check him out on social media. And
yeah, his Instagram is Banj Billions.
Okay. So
just by the Instagram name, I think it's gonna be a good clickbait.
Of course, yeah, of course. So yeah, thank you again, Simon, for joining me here in the pod. And do you have any final message before you go?
For me, I would like to give a message to all like the Phil-Ams that are trying to come out here to play in the PBA or follow footsteps of the Phil-Ams that have done it already. Just make sure, man, this is something you want to do, because this life is not for everybody. Like if you rewatch the podcast, there's a lot of factors that come into playing in the PBA. There's a lot of factors mentally. There's a lot of factors physically, spiritually, that you got to take into account. And you got to be 100% willing to do anything to be successful, to make it out here. So my advice to you guys is just keep working hard. Keep honing your craft. When you come out here, be ready for opportunity. And be patient, man, because everything is going to happen how it's going to happen.
Yeah. Thank you for that final message, Simon. And before you go, is it okay if we take a picture?
Sure.
Okay, I'll take it from here. 1, 2, 3. Okay, thank you, Simon, for joining me here in the pod. And yeah, see ya at the PBA games. And yeah, stay safe.
Yes, sir. Diego, man, thank you so much for having me on the show, brother. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.